The seventh step tells us we humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. Now we have just made a list of our shortcomings, of our moral defects of character. And we have gone to a third person and admitted to God, to Him, and to ourselves that these are our responsibility. And then in number seven, we're going to ask God to remove our shortcomings because we realize that we are powerless. Remember, we admitted that in step number one. Our lives had become unmanageable. Now again, I like to point out there's no words in the 12 steps wasted. So it says humbly. That means with a complete conviction that I can't, but also a complete conviction that God not only can, but that God will, in His time and in His way, remove our shortcomings. And you want to know a secret? Do you know what day will be the day when God will remove all of our shortcomings? It will be on the day that we achieve 100% humility. And I'm afraid for most of us, that's a long time off. You know, that's the reason that God permits many of our defects to remain. Because He realizes we still need, and need badly, the virtue of humility. So here we ask Him, not only once, but again and again, for Him in His time to remove our shortcomings. And if He doesn't, if we continue to fall, we're not surprised. We're only surprised that we don't become worse. But we go to Him with the knowledge that He will in His time. In answer to the invitation, ask and you shall receive, we go daily and ask God to remove these shortcomings. It's a lifetime work. But we didn't become alcoholics overnight either. Remember? Now here I'm going to bring out a factor which I believe might be a surprise to some of you. And that is, there is no such thing as alcoholic faults. There is no such thing as an alcoholic personality. Oh, there are a lot of people in AA who excuse themselves from a lot of things by saying, well, after all, I'm an alcoholic. What can you expect? Well, being an alcoholic means that I can't take alcohol. But it also means I can adjust to normal life if I want to, the same as anyone else. Now, to back up this statement of mine, I'm going to quote an outstanding authority, which I'm sure all of you will recognize. And that is Dr. Silkworth, who was the doctor for Bill, our founder. And in the Grapevine, in 1947, when the Grapevine was still just a four-page affair, he writes, and I quote, both in professional and lay circles, there is a tendency to label everything that an alcoholic may do as alcoholic behavior. The truth is, it is simple human behavior. It is simple human nature. It is a very wrong idea to consider many of the personality traits observed in alcoholics as peculiar to the alcoholic. Emotional and mental and other quirks are classified as symptoms of alcoholism merely because alcoholics have them. Yet, these same quirks can be found among all non-alcoholics. Actually, they are merely symptoms of mankind, unquote. Then also I can give you the opinion of Dr. Carl Menninger, who is the world's outstanding psychoanalyst. And in our clergy conference some years ago in Kansas City, he made the statement that for every alcoholic you point out with this, that, and the other emotional problem or disturbance or behavior, I can point out 1,000 human beings with the same disturbances, the same behavior, who are not alcoholic. Many of them drink, but they are not alcoholic. So therefore, It will keep us from using that as an excuse if we accept the fact that I can, if I will, I can adjust to normal living. It may take a long time. And all these funny little things that I have done and do are merely indications that I'm still human. You know, a lot of people come to me and say, well, Father, I've been trying for years, and I still do this, and I still do that. I say, you know what that proves? You're still alive, that's all. Two minutes after you're dead, there might be a change. I don't know. Then we come to step number 8, and that tells us we made a list of all the persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Now, I always like to tie this in with the 4th and 5th step. And I believe, it is only my opinion though, it is well if we take step number 8, the list taken therein, along with us when we take the list made in step 4 and seek advice on both of these together. This is another list, black on white, the same as we did in 4, except this has to do with people we harm. And in order to replace the list we carried around for years of the people that harmed us, remember? All the persons that we had harmed, no buts, no ifs, no excepts. All the persons we had harmed. Again, nothing counts but honesty. Now, who or how do we harm people? Well, we may harm people either materially, morally, or spiritually. How do we harm people materially? Well, by stealing, injustice, cheating, injury, material damage of any type or sort. That's material harm. Morally, we injure people by giving scandal, leading others to do wrong, coaxing others to do wrong, teaching others to do wrong. All those things are moral harms. Uncharitable talk is harming somebody morally. Detraction, calumny, cursing, all these things harm a person morally. Then spiritually, we harm others by neglect of prayer. After all, we pray the Lord's Prayer, not my Father who is in heaven, our Father who art in heaven. We don't let anybody out. We don't exclude anybody from our prayers. Whether we are Catholic, Protestant, Jew, black or white, rich or poor, drunk or sober, slipping or staying on the program. But, you know, the funny thing is, have you ever noticed the alcoholic when he says the Serenity Prayer? He doesn't say it like other people say the Lord's Prayer. We were taught to say the Lord's Prayer. He doesn't say, God grant us the serenity. God grant me the serenity. Me the courage. Me the wisdom. Well, I don't know. I frankly think that most of us just don't stop to think. But it does have quite a meaning behind it. Now, in making this list, we say we became willing to make amends to them all, again without exception. We don't say we became willing to make amends to all but John or Mary or Jane or Joseph or Aunt Sarah or somebody. Everybody. We don't ask whether they harmed us. As we'll see in the next step, we go to them and tell them we are sorry. We don't say, are you sorry too? Now what does the word amends mean? Amends means to even things up. In other words, no half measures. To put everything on an even basis again. No omissions, not even our enemies. Now let's stop. Everyone who's listening to this talk, for just 20 seconds, and ask ourselves honestly, have we actually, sincerely, taken this eighth step. Only you can answer that, but only you can get the benefit, or only you will suffer the lack of benefit from taking this and the subsequent step. Because in the next step, we immediately say, therefore, we made direct demands. We take action to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Now notice it says direct demands. There's a reason for that. Because we don't have that in the law of justice and rights. To explain, let me give you an example. If someone comes to me as a priest and say, Father, look, I stole $10 from Joe. Is it all right for me to send it back to him in the mail anonymously? Will that make it up? I would have to say, yes, that will make it up as far as the law of God and man has concern. Is that sufficient for the ninth step? Well, the ninth step's a little bit different. Of course, these are suggested steps. You don't have to. But it says direct amends. Why? We go directly to Joe. We say, here, Joe, I stole $10. Why? Because we need humility. And making direct amends gives us big chunks of humility at once. And no one needs them more than the pathologically proud alcoholic. I remember when I took the ninth step and the fifth step. You know, when I came into AA 18 years ago, fortunately for me, at least I say this from experience, most of the members of AA in Indianapolis were not Catholic. And so I, a priest coming in, they didn't tell me anything different than they told anybody else. They didn't tell me, Father, well, now, of course, you're different. You don't have to do this. And I'm afraid sometimes we make that mistake. We have a professional man come to AA or a priest or a doctor and we say, well, now, in your profession, you wouldn't have to do that. That's not in the book. It doesn't differentiate between alcoholics. Alcoholism is a disease that is self-leveling. Whether I am a doctor, a priest, a minister, a lawyer, an attorney, or whatever I may be, I am an alcoholic. And it is suggested to me that I do exactly what every other alcoholic did to achieve sobriety and adjustment to reality. And here we do it in step nine. So when I came to step nine, I remember my list. I'm not going to tell you how big it was either. But I very vividly recall that visit to a priest friend of mine. And it wasn't easy. I sweat long and many nights before I went. But I remember one item. One item when I was a pastor at Snake Run, Indiana. Now that's true, there is a Snake Run, Indiana. In fact, I heard just last month they struck oil on the property. They would after I left. But when I had been pastor there, before some of my difficulties when I was drinking, I had borrowed $200 from the parish. Well, yeah, I had borrowed it. And I had used it. So now I came to this priest and thought, well, maybe I can send it back. And the priest says, well, it says, Father, you make direct demands. I think you better go down to the present pastor and give it to him. Nothing was more difficult for me. But I did it. But I'm the one who benefited from it. It releases you from much fear, from much guilt, from many of the emotional blocks that we have had so many, many years. When we go directly to the individual and say, here, I was wrong. I am sorry. Wherever possible, we don't cut corners, but sometimes it might be impossible. Well, for instance, I might have damaged somebody that's dead. Maybe he has no heir. Maybe I damaged him materially. Well, there's nothing I can do about that. I merely have to leave that up to the hands of God. I might seek advice. My spiritual advisor might advise me to give it to charity. But I wish I could give it to him, but he's no more. You know the reason I wish I could give it to him? That's pride telling me that. Humility says, I can't. Just give it to charity. And God will say, okay. Or perhaps I've damaged the family. And now if I start to interfere in any way, it will make it worse. Then my advisor to whom I go will tell me, let that into the hands of God. And there again, I wish I could. Pride says that. But humility says, I can't. I leave it into the hands of God. And therefore, we put all these things that we can't do something about into the hands of God's providence. Now, how am I going to know whom I can't make up to and whom I can make up to? Well, that's the reason I suggest we take this list with us on our fifth step and leave the advisor to whom we go, give us the advice to whom we can go or to whom we should not try to make it up. You know, we're prejudiced against ourselves. It's just like self-medication. That's the reason doctors tell us self-medication is dangerous, because we're prejudiced against ourselves. Whereas the doctor is objective. And when we go to our sponsor or to a professional consultant or a professional advisor, he is objective. He's going to tell you the truth. For example, in my case, I know what I would have said. Let it go. That's the easy way. But the man who's looking at it for the sake of truth alone, he will tell you this is what the AA program suggests. And once again, as I mentioned in the fifth step, when you pick someone out for this advice, be sure you pick someone out who has taken this step himself or herself. Or if you pick a professional consultant out, be sure you get someone who understands what you're trying to do. You'll get better advice. If he doesn't understand it, explain to him. Let him read the steps. Explain what this means. It's better to have someone who already understands AA. Now this step, again, the same as the fifth step, may take a long, long time. It's not going to be done in a week or a month, maybe not even in a year or 5 years. Time is not important, but sincerity is. As long as we don't put it off because we don't want to do it. If we don't put it off but intend to do it as the days go along, then we are sincere. But once we say, I'm not going to make any more amends, then we're in trouble. Then we're in trouble. So I say time is not important, but the essence is sincerity. Now here again, we get from what we do in step number 9, a complete release from fear. We have a burden of emotion lifted from us that only they who have taken this step can know the essence of happiness that it brings with them. Do you have to take it? No. Nobody has to do anything in AA. These are suggested steps. If you have a better way, fine. But I doubt if you will find a more efficacious way. I doubt if you will find a more secure way to security of life, to adjustment to reality, and to a state of happiness and peace of mind and serenity. Let's stop a moment and go back to step 1. Step number 1, we take only once. That's the door to AA. And lots of guys and gals open the door and slam it and run. But they'll be back. They'll be back someday. However, we do remind ourselves of this first step every day. We begin each day asking God for the courage to live that day and the sobriety to go through those 24 hours. We make a contract of sobriety with Almighty God. Now, I don't know how you do that or if you do that. I'm only going to tell you what my sponsor used to tell us. And I remember he used to tell us, and he didn't mince any words either. One thing about Dorshire and my sponsor, he was honest, through and through. But when he put his chin out, he meant it. He says, well, gentlemen, I'll tell you what I do it. He says, you know, I get up first thing in the morning, I get down on my knees. Now, he says, gentlemen, the reason I get on my knees is because to me, that is an attitude of humility. And then I ask God to give me the grace of sobriety for 24 hours. Then I ask God for His will. And that's my first thing every day. A contract of sobriety for 24 hours. Doing that, we are repeating the first step, although we only take it once, we are bringing it back to our consciousness. And that's where a lot of fellows and gals get into trouble. They lose the sense of need. They come to AA, they get their jobs back, they get their friends back, then they drift away from AA, they drift away from this contract of sobriety, and suddenly they forget what sort of people they are. And the occasion comes up for a little drink, or a little beer, or an emotional setup which reminds us of a little drink or a little beer. We have no defense to throw up. Whereas if I've told myself once more today, I can't drink, and I've asked God for the strength to be sober today, and I'm around AA, believe me, instead of reaching for the drink, I don't care what happens, I'll reach for the phone, and I'll contact somebody in AA, or I'll reach for God and ask His assistance. I remember one fella in Indianapolis who had not too much knowledge of God when he come to AA. And we have the poker chip idea of sobriety there. We give a new fella a poker chip for 3 months, a white one, then a red one, then a blue one, then a silver one for a year, after a year. So this fella was given a poker chip, and he was told, now, if you're tempted to drink, either throw it away or call someone or say a prayer. So one day he was on a selling tour in another town, and he had a very bad day of it. Came back to his car, he had a flat tire. By that time he was getting all upset and resentful, and he reached in his pocket to get the keys to the car, and here comes this poker chip out. He squeezed it, he said, so hard that it was bent. And he thought to himself, well, anyhow, I'm going to get a drink in the next town. So he went over to the next town, drove up to the tavern, put his hands in his pocket again, and what came out but this poker chip? And he said, for the first time in his life, he breathed an honest prayer for help. And he says, to this day, this is the way he used to tell us, that day he had never taken another drink. He died last year after about 14 years of sobriety. In other words, this constant reminder of me that I can't drink today. Then step 2 to 9, that puts us on the program. That gets rid of the past, adjusts the present, puts the future in the hands of God. Then we are ready to live the program in steps 10, 11, and 12. Those are the steps we take day in and day out. You know, there's a lot of guys and gals will say, you know, I take all 12 steps every day. Well, you can't do that. That's kind of a screwy program if you can. No, 10, 11, and 12 tell us there's a repeated inventory, there's repeated prayer and meditation, there's repeated and continuing 12-step activity. Now let's take tonight step number 10. In step number 10, we say, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Now why do we have this step? In step number 4, we took a general inventory. And we found an awful mess. Let's be honest. Now, we don't want that to happen again. So in order to prevent our thinking to become stinking and stinking to thinking to become drinking thinking, and all this to start up again, every day we're going to take a few moments of inventory to check on ourselves, to ask ourselves, where are we going, and how are we doing, and what are we doing to get there? Continue. This is a continuing action of the living of the AA program. Now, how do we take this inventory? As we saw in the fourth step, we wrote out the inventory of our past, but that was because there was so much for so many years that we had to write it out in order to get a good look at ourselves. Now, in this inventory, we don't have to write it out. It's not suggested to. In fact, we only take a few moments each day and ask ourselves, what have I done today? What have I done with these 24 hours? Now, spiritual writers for centuries have given us a way to work this inventory. And they have told us to take our biggest fault and work on it. And if we improve in that regard, we will automatically improve in all the other areas of our living. Why? Because the soul is a simple substance. You cannot split the soul. That's the reason the split personality is such a mess. The person is trying to do something he can't do. The soul is a simple substance and cannot be divided. Philosophy tells us that. Therefore, if I improve in the virtue of honesty, I'm going to improve in all the other virtues along with it. So if my biggest problem is dishonesty, and I work every day at going out of my way to be honest, I will automatically improve in all the other areas of my living. In other words, pick out my biggest fault. The only difficulty with this method is that it's awfully monotonous. As we said a moment ago, it's going to take a lifetime to change this guy we call us. And therefore, every day for years to work on one fault is awfully monotonous. It's called the monotony of the spiritual life. But I'm going to throw out for whoever wants it a novel idea. And I'll guarantee you it's just as efficient and as effective. But I don't think it's nearly so monotonous. And this is called the poker chip method. Now, the way you do it, you go buy yourself a box of poker chips. Maybe you won't have to do that. I don't know. But you take those poker chips, and on the back of the, or on one side of these poker chips, you write all of the virtues. And on the other side, you write all the opposite of these virtues, including emotional disturbances, mental conflicts, any other individual problem that might be ours. Write the opposite on the other side. Take that box, you might need two boxes. I don't know by the time you get finished. Put that on your table or on your chiffonier. I don't care where you put it. Shake it up in the morning. Pick one out. And then go out of your way once during that day to perform an action of that virtue. That's as simple as it works. You may get the same one 7 days on running. I don't know. But you probably need it. So if I pick out, for instance, the habit of uncharity, maybe I have very great difficulty with being uncharitable in my talk and in my thinking. Or if I happen to pick that poker chip out and it tells me on the other side, charity, fraternal love of my fellow man. So I'm going to look someone up whom I don't like and be nice to him. Now that's difficult, but it works. It really does. Or honesty. I find on the other side of dishonesty, honesty. So I go out of my way to be honest in some particular circumstance on that day. And so on with all the other virtues. As I say, it's not nearly as monotonous as the age-old traditional way of doing it, of taking your biggest fault and working on it day in and day out. But it does do the job. And it's amazing what it will accomplish. I'll guarantee anyone that if they use this for 1 year, you will be amazed at yourself. You won't even recognize yourself in the mirror, except the first thing in the morning. But you know why that is? Because after all, each day is a beginning again. Each day is initiating adjustment again to reality. That's the reason it's so hard to get up every morning. It'll be that way till you're dead. Because we are beginning again. Now, we should not expect, therefore, too fast improvement. Because if we do, we're liable to go off on the tangent of what we call spiritual pride. And that's the most diabolical of all. A fellow in our group one time pulled me aside, and he said, "Say, Father, you're not doing your job around here." this has been many years ago. I said, oh, I'm not. No, Father, you're not. He says, they're so-and-so and they're so-and-so. They're Catholics. They're not back to church. You ought to get them and make them go back to church. I said, I should. He says, yes, Father. I said, well, I'll tell you something. I've been a priest many years, been in AA a number of years. You know, I found out you can't make anybody do anything they're not ready to do. According to AA philosophy, we work on ourselves and make us ready to help or to give encouragement when we are asked. Well, no, Father, he said, you're wrong. I said, I am. Yes, he said, you take me, for example, now. He says, I go home every night, I teach my wife catechism, I teach my children catechism, I go to church every day. In fact, I've made up my mind that anything I set my mind to, I can do. I said, oh, you can. Yes, sir. So I told my friend who was with me that night, I said, keep your eye on John. His name was John Doe, too. And we did. And he did. He disappeared over the line into Mexico here about 8 years ago. As far as we know, he has no family, nothing left. Maybe he's not even alive. I don't know. Spiritual pride. In other words, we realize that we're increasingly adjusting to life. We're becoming so much better people, then we begin to take the credit. And that's the danger. You know, that's the reason I think some of these inventories you find around the groups are a little dangerous. You've seen those. It has the faults on one side and the good points on the other. And it says, ask yourself each day, how am I doing in each one? The difficulty is, if I'm doing fine, I'm liable to go off on the tangent of pride. And if I'm not doing so well, I'm liable to get full of self-pity. Whereas the only thing I should ask myself is, did I try? Am I willing? Now, I mentioned in one of the other steps, and I'm going to mention it again. I'll mention it again before we take the 12th step. One thing God's not going to ask us when we die. He's not going to ask you whether you succeeded. He's not going to ask you how many medals you won, how many victories you've had, how many diplomas, nor degrees, nor money. No, he's only going to ask you how many scars have you got. How many times did you try? How willing are we? God doesn't want our strength. He doesn't need our strength. He needs our willingness. He gave us a free will. If we are willing, that's all he asked. Are we willing? So in this working on ourselves, we may work on ourselves for 10 years and find ourselves just as bad as we were 10 years ago. But if we can honestly say we have tried each day to begin again anew, then we have nothing to worry about. Nothing to worry about, because God's only going to ask us how we played the game, not whether we won or lost. You know, the success of all these things are in the hands of God. Ours is only the footwork. Now then, in this step, we say, when we were wrong, we promptly admitted it. Now that wrong, that term means moral wrong, mental mishap or conflict, emotional upset, resentment, self-pity, anger, anything that might disturb us in a way that might cause us to crave a drink. And it tells us, promptly admit it. Get a hold of somebody. Talk it out. Oh, so many slip because they hold to themselves these emotional disturbances, these resentments, these difficulties. One person was telling me the other night, she says, oh, Father, she says, if I call an AA, I don't want to bother him. I'm not bothering him. If you're bothering him, he shouldn't be an AA. You're helping him stay sober by calling him. And therefore, to get rid of it, because we're alcoholics, we cannot tolerate these emotional disturbances. We must get rid of them, or else if we don't, you know what's going to happen? It's going to grow and grow and grow inside, and someday, sooner or later, it's going to blossom and bloom in the four beautiful roses. When we were wrong, promptly admitted it. We don't ask when the other guy was wrong. In other words, if I get angry at somebody, I don't worry what he did. It makes no difference to me whether he was justified or not. I am wrong in getting angry. I am wrong in staying resentful. I am wrong in reacting to life circumstances in a way a child acts. That makes me immature. But what is worse, being an alcoholic, if I continue that, it's going to cause me to crave alcohol. Because whether I like it or not, there's an automatic tie-up now in the alcoholic between these emotional disturbances and the craving for alcohol. And therefore, if I permit myself to become upset, resentful, full of self-pity, or any such thing too frequently or for too long a period of time, I am going to drink again. And that's one thing we don't want to do. So there we have step number 7, 8, 9, and 10. Just a few more instances that are given to us, opportunities, if you want to call them that, to adjust to life, to sober life, to happy life, to living as God intended us. And that's happiness. That's serenity. May God grant you all much, much serenity. Thanks for listening.